Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's say hello to our good friend Jared Sutton. Jared, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm good. How are you?
Doing very well. House of Hustle, the podcast that we do together, brought to you by our friends at Charlie Hustle. Please take this opportunity to promote our latest episode.
Yeah, our latest episode was a great one. I think it's up there for me as one of our favorite, one of my favorites, maybe one of the better ones we've done. We've had some great interviews, but our latest one was Mike Anderson, my at Mizzou, former Arkansas Razorback and St. John's head coach. Really good conversation. I think we covered pretty much everything, Stephen. Really great interview, and I know he enjoyed it. So definitely worth your time, and was really appreciative of just kind of talking about the 08-09 Elite Eight run that we had, and the difficulty it was leaving Mizzou for Arkansas, and got in a little bit of Calipari and today's portal NIL world. So it was really refreshing. Coach doesn't do that a lot, so meant a lot that he jumped on and had a conversation with us. It was great.
When Jared Sutton calls, Mike Anderson answers. That's how that works, right?
Well, I think Coach A was pretty impressed with the UMKC story that you shared, Stephen. I thought that was great in terms of potential UMKC hiring back in the day.
Yeah, he didn't think anyone knew about that, but he was somewhat shocked, but I just wanted him to refute that, but he did not. And then I was, you saw the look on my face, but whatever.
It was a little bit of a deflation for a few minutes.
Yeah. And honestly, it did bring up some feelings about Mizzou basketball. It has not been really the same.
Yeah.
And I know the people, and I was one of them, people were so mad or hurt or upset that he left. We kind of lost sight of what he did, like what he took over when it was in such turmoil. When I was there, Todd Lebo, you talk about me going out and covering different things. When I was there at Mizzou Arena, not knowing if I was there to cover a press conference detailing the firing of Mike Alden or the hiring of Mike Anderson.
Who knew?
And it happened, Mike Anderson, not too long after. Remember, I was at what hotel was I at? Was it the Holiday Inn or somewhere that impromptu press conference by Quinn Snyder and his all.
I think that might have been a Holiday Inn.
Because it was a crazy time.
Oh, dude.
What he took over.
30 for 30.
What he took over was. And he got them back to a point where they were relevant. And they were a good basketball team with an identity that made the Elite Eight. They were recruiting at a high level. That's why you get mad when someone. You don't get mad when someone leaves because they're not doing a good job, because you don't love them. And so that it was tough. But he never quite got to the level that Arkansas thought he was going to get.
Arkansas thinks they're going to win everything all the time.
Right. It would have been better off for everyone maybe if he just would have stayed at Mizzou. But I'm not going to sit here and discuss that. My point is this. It hadn't been the same. There have been some glimpses of Mizzou having a good year here or there, but it just hasn't been the same all the way since he's been gone. And now we turn our lonely eyes to the transfer portal and hope that Dennis Gates can turn things around. And let me tell you something. He's spending money in that transfer portal left and right now, bringing him in. Mark Mitchell, the latest addition, leaving Duke to come home, Kansas City native, to go to Mizzou. What did Mizzou get in Mark Mitchell?
They got a very athletic, mobile, high energy, high motor big man. Mark Mitchell's probably 6'9". He's long, very explosive athlete, but doesn't shoot the ball that well. That would be the only concern. But outside of that, I mean, in terms of like a modern day athletic, mobile, switchable big, and he's not a 5, he's more of a 4, but he can really compete just with his strength and just some of those athletic tools that he has. Very switchable. I think what I love about him most is the defensive side of the ball. And when we talk about Mizzou basketball and where they're at, I mean, at some point they're going to have to address rebounding, the details and the margins of winning. And Mark Mitchell rebounds the ball. I do think it needs to be said that Mark Mitchell, like starting the year at Duke, it did not go well. in non-conference play. And you could tell he was lost. How Duke played, he really didn't fit, especially with how guard-centric that Duke team was around Kyle Filipowski, with Roach, with Jared McCain, with Proctor. You know, he was kind of trying to find his way. And then when I saw Duke play towards the second half of the season in conference play, I saw Duke twice. He was much more of a factor, and you could see that he wasn't, you know, trying to make a mistake. He wasn't overthinking. When he just is allowed to play to his athleticism and to his, like, high energy, high motor, because he plays so relentlessly hard. Like, that's what he did in high school. And he was so impactful. He can just kind of fall into a double-double just by his athleticism, his motor, and just his ability to do so many little things that impact winning. So that's what Mizzou gets in Mark Mitchell. Is a starting power forward right out of the gate. And, you know, in an NIL world, I think Mizzou's doing a great job, football and basketball. And I got to give it a little tip of the cap to Desiree Reed-Francois. I mean, that's why we're here, is the NIL ruling, the NIL law that she, you know, wrote into effect. And we're able to sign some guys, and we were an 0-19 basketball team. And we've kind of flipped the page a little bit with what we're doing in the NIL space. Tony Perkins, Marcus Warwick, Jacob Cruz, like those transfers are good transfers. And then you pair that with, you know, Tamar returning, Trent Pierce, Anthony Robinson, maybe Caleb Grill, and then the freshmen coming in. You know, that's a good start. And I don't think they're done either, Stephen. I think there's some more to be done with the roster, and we'll just see how that plays out.
It would be nice to get a post presence, a five, someone that can protect the rim and rebound, right?
Yep, no question. I think that's what I'm looking at. And you know, we've talked about this so many times. The portal just never stops. And I think since the last time we spoke, Stephen, there's been probably five bigs that have put their name in the portal that I'm like, that's a good fit. that's something Mizzou could need right there. So it's just never ending right now. And here we are, end of April, and there's still players putting their name in the portal. And it's not like they're bad players either. I mean, there's obviously reasons to put your name in the portal now. And I'm just surprised at the timing of all this sometimes. When players put their name in, when they don't put their name in, what decides that? Obviously, it's when, you know, programs get players signed or when players announce they're returning. I think that's why Mark Mitchell, a lot of guys left Duke for just what's coming in. That freshman class that is super talented that is coming to Duke. I think that's partially why Mark Mitchell put his name in the portal as well and why he's going to Mizzou.
Let me tell you something. With you talking about NIL and transfer portal, Lebo's got this big frown on his face.
I don't have a frown.
You don't like it?
No, I'm fine.
You want things the way they used to be?
No, I don't.
Back in the olden days. You said it earlier.
No, but it is wild, though, Jarrett, because you mentioned Duke. So Duke had the number one recruiting class 2 years ago. With four players, five-star players. They have the number one recruiting class now. And the freaking Duke Blue Devils have seven players who were all in these classes over the past 3 years in the transfer portal, plus two guys leaving early.
What's the problem?
There's no problem. It's just wild to me. And it's not like, listen, a lot of teams have people in the portal. But you go to Duke and you're a top whatever player, and now you're just like, all right, I'm out. It's crazy.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right. Yeah, and I just after every college basketball season, it's free agency now. The freshmen there is freshman classes that are coming in. There are players that are still being recruited, but college coaches now. This used to be the period where most college coaches were recruiting high school guys. It was sort of a live period, and they were on the more of the high school scene. Now that's kind of on the back burner. It's more portal NIL. That's what they're consumed by. But I think in the Duke case, like, they're always going to try to bring in the best high school players. And I'm curious how this works now with Kentucky, too. Does that shift, and do we see the same, you know, Calipari bringing those type of players to Arkansas? You know, is that still going to be his model? Is he going to change things up after what went on in Kentucky? Probably not. But that's still a conversation. Like, does older still win? Does older win you games in the NCAA tournament? Are you taking mid-majors and running that risk because you can hit on a mid-major like a Dalton Knett, who was SEC Player of the Year? Or do you hit on you get a guy that you think can be a great player at your level, and it just doesn't work? We've seen that many of times with some of these power schools. So that's a big topic of conversation with college coaches now, too, is, you know, are you trying to go after – the Mark Mitchells of the world? Or are you going to try to go after maybe like Baylor Shireman, Al Creighton did it? You know, they've got Baylor Shireman, and they were a successful program for 2 years and really were able to identify a guy at the mid-major level to come to the Big East and be an impact player. That's kind of what coaches are looking at right now.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, it's a different world for coaches, and you have to adapt or quit. And we've seen some of the best coaches in all of college basketball history just kind of tap out and go, you know what, it's been a good run. I don't need to be coaching anymore, and they're just out of the game because it's just not for them. We're seeing it happen in football now. I mean, I think Nick Saban wasn't going to quit probably, and he's been honest with us. Like, I just don't like what's happening right now, and you better figure it out because it's not changing. We're seeing these laws happen. You mentioned the Missouri law has been on the books for a couple of years. There are laws like this happening in Virginia now. The NCAA just ruled last week that the unlimited transfers is just going to keep going. And this is just what it's going to be from now on. And if you don't like it, sorry, I guess. That's the way it's going to work.
I was talking to a head coach over the weekend and he said, you evolve or you die. That's how it goes. Like, you have to be evolving with the times. I was just listening to Coach Hurley the other day. He was doing a podcast, and he was talking about, you know, he did say, I think it's true, like, he wanted to win and win national championships so he could just not deal with the portal until after they got done playing. I still think, like, these coaching staffs have to work through, and I know fan bases want to see their teams, like, sign players immediately, but they're still trying to, like, do background. They're still trying to, you know, study the players and see what fits are there. They're still trying to be selective of what they're bringing in, just like they would do any recruit, whether it be a high school recruit or transfer. And then just, like, also trying to evolve, like, how UConn's done such a great job with just evolving their offense. Like, their actions, their sets, how they run offense is so high level. And I think UConn has really proven that, you know, you really need to be able to win in different ways. Like, you need to be able to, and it's easier said than done, but, like, you know, Stephen was just saying that, you know, Mizzou probably should be looking at a big, like a true five, and they do need to be doing that. But, you know, can they win with big lineups and small lineups? And, you know, Mizzou's, over the last 2 years under Dennis Gates, as Coach Gates has shown, you'll play a lot of guys. Like, is that the model? Is it, no, you want to focus on 7-8 guys, have a tight rotation, be older, maybe have a couple young talents that are emerging talents, like, you know, maybe it's Mark Mitchell, for example, that's just an athletic, mobile, high-motor guy. Like, there's ways to build your roster in different ways, but you always got to be evolving with the times. NIL's here to stay. You're going to have to deal with that. You're going to have to figure that out. And there has been so many coaches that have said over the last month, like, they're going to walk on guys if the only the conversation is around NIL. Like, some of these coaches, they'll just say, you know what, you're not for us. Maybe we need to move on and go to someone else. But knowing fully that NIL is going to be the conversation at the end of the day. Like, you are going to have to talk about it, but you still need to process of, are we getting a guy that wants to come here, that loves the game, that wants to work, that wants to win, you know, that wants to, you know, that thinks this is the right fit for them? Like, those things still matter. Like, that you're still trying to figure out guys that are going to help you win and are about the right things. That's not just money in NIL, even though that is at the forefront of the conversation more times than not in recruiting.
We're talking to Jarrett Sutton. Let's talk a little bit about some of the decisions that are going to be made here going into the NBA. We've got some guys in the who have declared and not come out yet, and they're going to come back. What do you think is going to happen with some of the local guys, like someone like Johnny Furphy? Is he going to stay in there? Is he ready to go play in the NBA?
Right now it'll be, I guess, this coming Saturday where it's the NBA draft early entry deadline. So, this is the last week for players to officially put their name in. They can maintain their eligibility. A lot of these guys will put their name in. Some of these guys have put their name in. They're in the transfer portal. So
they're on a lot of lists.
They're literally on every list here. But, I mean, in most cases, and I would just say, like, no matter what, it's good to get feedback. This is something, you know, Jalen Wilson and Ochai Agbaji did. That was very beneficial to them. Baylor Shireman, I just used him earlier. Like, he's going to be in this draft. There's guys that are, you know, are there truly to get feedback. Zach Edey did this, really trying to get feedback and understanding. PJ Hall is another one, and he'll be in the draft. PJ helped himself a ton at Clemson. So there are guys that do take this seriously in terms of wanting workouts for teams to not only showcase themselves but understand, you know, what the feedback is, especially if they have eligibility and they know they're not going to be a first-round pick. And, you know, we just talked about NIL. Sometimes these NIL contracts, they're more money than the two-way contracts. And, you know, it makes sense for them to go back to school just financially. Other guys, you know, they put their name in their younger guys, and they might be in a different conversation, and this is where Johnny Furphy falls. You know, a draft like this, I think, is a good draft for Johnny Furphy. He showed a lot. He is not a finished product. There are still areas of his game he needs to improve, and, you know, the strength components of this in terms of physicality, but just a high IQ player, not many guys at 6'8 that move like him. He showed enough as a shot maker. I love his IQ in terms of being able to play without the ball, which will be his role at the NBA level. And what you're looking for is just guys that translate from the college game to the NBA game, knowing it is a completely different game. But Johnny Furphy fits the NBA game in many ways. And look, I think for him, it's going to be a conversation, and it's his decision just because he is a younger player. He can go back to Kansas. He has that opportunity to do that. But I think a lot of the, you know, the coaches and, you know, a lot of the people that will be around Johnny to make this decision understand that there is going to be, you know, a decision to be made, and you need to make that decision that's based around, is it the right thing for you if you're going to be a first-round pick and you're going to be a lock to be in that first round and you got a chance to start your NBA career, be on an NBA salary, and be guaranteed. That's going to be the name of the game for Johnny Furphy.
All right, before we run out of time, because Jake's screaming at me, honestly, it's
hurt. He didn't scream.
Hurt my feelings a little bit. Couple of series continue that a lot of people got their eyes on tonight. Jake says these are the big markets, and that's what you're supposed to focus on. Lakers Nuggets. Let's go Nuggets!
Nuggets.
Do you think the Lakers will make this a series? The Denver's up 1-0, or will the Nuggets pummel LeBron and the Lakers?
Well, right now, I mean, history would say the Lakers have lost 9 straight to the Nuggets, so it's not been the best matchup for them. You know, I think you look at Game 1, and, you know, I thought the Lakers showed well, you know, in the first half, really, and then that third quarter, Denver just flexed its championship DNA. And in terms of the Lakers, like, you know, Anthony Davis and LeBron have to be great. And I thought they were great, both those guys. It's a big series, though. I mean, so much about winning in the playoffs. You do have to have your stars. You have to have a third scorer. I think that's really important in the playoffs. You have to have a guy that's not just your top two guys, but you have to have a third guy that can be a threat. And I think, too, your bench is very important. And the Lakers bench, you know, wasn't that great in Game 1. I am curious, you know, what the Lakers do around Gabe Vincent, just because Gabe Vincent was pretty good last year against the Nuggets in the playoffs when he was with Miami. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I think he could be a piece in this series. We'll see how that works. And after Game 1, there's always adjustments, so that's something to watch for. But, you know, I think with Nikola Jokic, and we could go on and on, you know, he's had, you know, so many triple-doubles in this matchup against the Lakers. But Jokic just has such an ability to manage a game. It's incredible. You know, to start to finish, he just kind of picks and chooses. He's so unbelievably efficient. But whatever the game needs, he just kind of does it. He had 12 rebounds. He was 15 of 23 from the field. Like, that's just so high level. 39 minutes plus 14. So it just impacts the game on both ends of the floor. But Jamal Murray was great. I thought Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was very good. He's such a good piece for them in terms of shot-making from three. And then Michael Porter played really well, 19-8 and super efficient. So that starting five is going to carry the Nuggets wherever. You know, the bench, you know, Christian Brown is probably their top guy off the bench, and he is so good for them defensively. Talk about switchable and tough and can piece on the glass and just does his job. Peyton Watson is another really good off-the-bench player. So I like the Nuggets just top to bottom. And I think for the Lakers, like D'Angelo Russell, yes, he needs to make shots. I think so much is made around D'Angelo because he went 6 for 20 and 1 for 9. But D'Angelo cannot be a turnstile on defense. Like, the Nuggets are just completely targeting him in mismatches. And that's a big part of this, is can the Lakers just find a way to guard these other guys? Like, it's not just Jokic. It's because Jokic can pick you apart as a passer, and for the Lakers defensively, all five guys got to defend. You know, Austin Reeves has to defend. He has to play well. You know, the bench and Dinwiddie and Jackson Hayes, like those guys got to come in and defend. And the second unit just did not do enough for the Lakers.
All right, that's the nightcap for the TNT doubleheader. The first game is game two between the Knicks and the 76ers. I like watching the Knicks. I like their brand of basketball. And, of course, every game is totally dependent on the health and the knee of Joel Embiid. And also, I'd like to see the fan bases fight and to see if they could settle it that way. What about this Knicks and 76ers series?
Yeah, that's why I love the series. It's the fan bases and the proximity of both teams and the history of this matchup. But it is centered around Embiid's health. He got off to such a great start. Like Joel in the first half was just fantastic. I hated to see him go down. He was not the same in the second half. I think that's going to be the area to watch for in the series, obviously. I mean, it's number one, the health of Embiid. He does not look right, and honestly, I don't really think he's looked right since he came back, to be honest with you. He's fighting it. I give him a ton of credit. Like, he's competing. You know, that knee does not look good. He is the franchise, and he's dealt with this thing for a while now. So he's the piece to watch for, and it's just a different game. You know, in the second half, I do think Philly competed, and Tyrese Maxey is one of my favorite players in the league. He should be probably most improved player. You know, they're going to need more from probably Kyle Lowry and Harris and Kelly Oubre. And, you know, that is probably what Philly's looking at, but it's always going to be centered around Embiid. But, yeah, the Knicks have been great all season, and it's Jalen Brunson, who did not really play well in game one, has been fantastic all year. And then Josh Hart, who I love, he's one of my favorite guys in the league. He was with us in New Orleans 2 years ago. He's been such a good addition to that starting lineup, and it's just incredible in that rotation. OG Anunoby, local guy from Jeff City, excellent defender. They got him in the trade at the deadline. He's been a little banged up, but can show what he's capable of playing both ends of the floor in a playoff series like this, a physical series where you need a guy to match up with different guys with size. And OG brings that. And then Dante DiVincenzo and that bench of that the Knicks have. I thought Miles McBride, named from, you know, West Virginia, he was great in game one, really shot the ball well. And the Knicks bench really, I thought, carried him in game one at many times. And that's for me, watching any playoff series, it's not just the stars. It's the role players. It's the bench that can really make an impact in this series. But we'll see where it goes from here, because I do think Philly is capable of beating the Knicks in the series, but it's all going to center around Embiid, because I don't know if the Knicks can match up with Embiid when he's right. Embiid can take over a game at any time, and I don't think the Knicks can match that. So we'll see how that looks in the series.
I got Jake DiVincenzo here wanting me to break, so I got to stop talking. Hey, Jared, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
That's Jared Sutton. We'll be back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the show. Let's talk to our friend Kevin Ioli from KevinIoli.com. Your one stop, your only stop for the best coverage of combat sports, including boxing and MMA. And I see there's a beautiful picture of King Ryan Garcia standing over Devin Haney. Harvey Dock looking confused as he was for most of the fight. But Kevin Ioli joins us. Kevin, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Steven. How are you doing, pal?
Let me tell you something. Very rarely in the fight game where I am totally stunned, like absolutely stunned at a result. Saturday was one of them. I did not see that coming at all. My DraftKings account will let you know that I didn't see that coming at all. Kevin, I only... And honestly, I mean... Look, there's so much to unpack here. I mean, it looked like Ryan Garcia had a case of the crazies all the way up to the fight on social media. I don't know how much of that was overblown. I still think that there's it could be all true, right? I mean, Mike Tyson wasn't totally sane leading up to many of his fights, and he still won and performed. But I mean, like, how do you explain what we saw on Saturday night? because Ryan Garcia goes in there and beats a guy that was on a lot of people's pound-for-pound lists, an undefeated fighter who had fought a good level of competition. That was stunning to me, Kevin.
It was. I mean, you know, but I would say remember that we are talking about, you know, you're not building a rocket to go to Mars. You were punching somebody in the face. So, you know, the requirements of what you know, you have to do. You know, I think there's a little bit of everything. You know, did he play a little bit of possum? I think he did. But, you know, was there legitimate, you know, I don't think Ryan is one of the guys that loves the fight, right? I think he gets antsy when the fight comes around and, you know, like a lot of guys do, right? He's not the only one and doesn't want to do it. And he reacts in a way, you know, he mentioned he's ADHD. He sometimes reacts in a way when he's nervous that, you know, isn't what you would expect out of a big, tough boxer, right? And, you know, I think, you know, you know boxing well enough. You knew that Ryan Garcia was good enough to win. The reason we were excited about this fight, and I wrote this a number of times. Hey, I had a lot of stuff talking about how crazy he was, and I quoted Kevin Cunningham, a 35-year trainer, saying he had never seen anything like this in 35 years in the business. But we all knew that this kid was really powerful and was really fast, and that if he shows up, he's going to be a problem. I wrote that in almost everything I wrote about the fight. But the thing was, we questioned, would he show up? So I think we handicapped it right. We just didn't expect maybe him to show up the way he showed up.
And just him, and look, there's plenty of body shots that leave somebody incapacitated and they can't go on. But just the way the fight against Gervonta Davis ended, I think, left a somewhat bad taste in people's mouths that, okay, if it gets going tough here, then maybe he's going to tap out of this situation. He didn't. He got hit a couple of times. Now, Devin Haney doesn't have anywhere near the power the Tank does. But he did get hit. He had adversity. And that was the interesting thing about the scorecards. I honestly, after the fight was over, I wasn't sure who was going to get the decision because the rounds that Ryan Garcia won, he dominated, he had knockdowns, he also had a point deducted, but then there were stretches when he did nothing, and Devin Haney won rounds just with the jab, and so it was like, I don't know, are they going to go with quantity over quality? And like Chris Mannix had it 112-112 on the broadcast. One of the judges had it 112-112. I think you said you had it 113-111 for Garcia.
Correct.
And that's probably what I feel like. I feel like Garcia deserved a close decision. But as bad as he beat up Devin Haney, the fight was actually really close. And it should have been close on the scorecards, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was 6-6, right? So, you know, if you look at it and you say, you know, Garcia has to win the first round. He hurt Haney with probably the first punch it lands in the fight and had him wobbling around a little bit. How people don't understand, power is scored in professional boxing. So that first round, I mean, I wouldn't say Haney, Garcia, excuse me. You know, Garcia hurt Haney in the first round. Power is scored in professional boxing. He wins the first round. Then you take the rounds that he got the knockdowns in, so 7, 8, and 11. That gives him 4. So out of the other 8, he just had to win 2, and he did. And with that, you know, with the points for the knockdowns, and that's where you get the 113-111 score that I came up with. You know, and I just think that Ryan fought the kind of fight that he's capable of in the sense that when he let his hands go, he was, you know, he was – Super Rye, King Rye. He was the guy that was there. But when he didn't, you know, that's when you start saying, is he checking out of the fight? You know, that whole mental thing. And after the fight, he said he was drinking during the fight week and everything. What does that tell you? You know, I and the Golden Boy PR person, Jane Mercier, she really took a shot at me because I said right before the fight, I said, don't be surprised if Ryan quits on the stool in this fight. And so, you know, she retweeted my tweet and said, this aged well. you know, but I mean, I think that, like, I stand by what I said, you know, by the behavior that he had. And even in some of those runs when he's just turning his back and, like you said, he wasn't punching. I mean, it was just bizarre stuff from this kid. And, you know, God bless him that he was able to pull off the win. But it's hard to know now what's true and what's not true. I saw there was a story circulating this morning that he bet $2 million on himself and at 6-1 and won a $12 million payout. I just, I find that hard to believe, but who knows?
That's wild.
Right. Yeah, that happened.
But hey, everything in boxing is wild. We're talking to Kevin Ioli about the fight this past weekend. And we talk about judging a lot in this. And, you know, baseball fans are all mad. They want robot umps in there. They want to take the human element out of it. Is judging better, worse in boxing than it's been in the past? Are there enough people who actually know how to properly judge fights?
You know, I think it is better than people give credit for, you know, and one of the issues that I bring up a lot of times with people that they don't understand is that, you know, when you're watching a fight with your buddies at home and you're sitting there and you're drinking and you maybe have a bet on one of the fights, you're eating popcorn or pizza or whatever you're doing, you know, you're not sitting there with your eyes on the ring and the fighters, you know, for 3 minutes. Now, you know, without breaking concentration. And believe me, when I'm at the fights, that's what I try to do. But, hey, when I'm at home and I'm not at the fights, I'm tweeting about the fights. The thing that, you know, when you have that little break, like, hey, if I'm typing something on Twitter to, you know, engage with the fans, I look down for a second, you hear the fans, I don't know what happened. That we're scoring or not. And so I think sometimes the fans don't really understand the criteria and how boxing is scored. And you hear a lot of people say, like, you know, you have to take it from the champion. And that is complete and utter BS, right? And, you know, all you have to do is just do enough to win enough rounds to win the fight, right? And there's no taking it from the champion. The champion's edge in any fight is that he keeps the title on a draw. That is a huge thing, right? You know, if you keep the title on a draw. And that's the edge that the champion gets, but otherwise it was not. So I think that the scoring is okay, right? I don't think it's perfect. And we have some judges that are better than others. And we have some judges that have done it for a long time that, you know, maybe were good at one point or aren't good now. But I think by and large, the judging in boxing isn't bad.
And look, Ryan Garcia clearly benefited from not having to drain himself to make weight. I think we can say that maybe Haney, maybe he got distracted by all this stuff and didn't take Ryan Garcia as seriously. Maybe he drained himself to get down to 140. That's why Garcia couldn't win the title. But also, the one thing that you know you have to look out for is the left hook from Ryan Garcia. And it just kept landing. And so there was a situation where that in the fight, there weren't the necessary adjustments made from Haney. And so it's partially Garcia had a good performance, but I was disappointed in Haney's performance. So now before we wrap up, what's next for both of them? Garcia has a huge social media following. He now has a marquee win that stunned a lot of people. So if he acts right, or at least handles himself right, he can capitalize on this and have another big fight or two, whether it's a rematch with Haney, I don't know. What do you think should be next for each of these fighters?
Well, Ryan says he's going to 147, so do we believe that? So that's where the first thing comes, right? Do we actually believe that he is going to move up to 147, right? And, you know, I question, like he said, I can't get below 143. And I just question that, right? I mean, he was below 143 when he fought Tank Davis last year, considerably below that, obviously. I think the question becomes, who does he fight? And, you know, that is a big thing. I'll tell you a fight that's not talked about, but that I would like to see for him that I think would be, you know, you talked about two guys that maybe people say are crazy, would be him and Teofimo Lopez.
No, boy.
I mean, imagine that fight. You know, if you got the two of them in there, because those guys look at the world differently than everybody else, and they look at things, but they both come to, you know, throw bombs, right? You know, Ryan was, you know, I think some people describe Ryan as a boxer puncher, you know, and I don't know that he's much of a boxer, but he's got fast hands, and he has got tremendous power. So, you know, he's coming to take your head off, right? And if he, you know, if he realizes he can do that, then he's going to, you know, dig in and go after you. And if he doesn't, you know, I think he maybe just melts away. But with him and Teofimo, to me, that would be a really, really fun fight.
You wouldn't even have to ask a question at the press conference. Just open the mic and say, go, all right, guys, go. And nobody would get a word in.
That's who I watched in Vegas, Super Bowl.
Yeah,
right?
you saw Teofimo. Yeah, that was a
good fight. It was not a good fight. He bored me during the fight. He was fun walking in.
This would be good, though. Yeah. This would not bore you. That's an excellent suggestion
Make
there,
the fight.
Kevin.
Let's
Early.
Do it.
Kevin, hopefully in a couple weeks we can have you on before Canelo fights Jaime Munguia and talk about that. We got a lot of good fights coming up, my man. As always, thank you so much for the time. KevinIoli.com for all the best coverage. Kevin, thank you.
See you guys. Thanks for having me.
Great job by Kevin Ioli.
You're betting on Munguia?
No, I am not. Don't you ever say those cross words with me
I want to
ever
watch
again.
That fight with you.
Let's do it. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you to all of our guests. We had Mark Boberichter in studio for an hour. Scott Carroll in studio for an hour. We talked to Jared Sutton. And we talked to Kevin Ioli. Talked to
Jay Sutt.
We were from Brett Veach. We were from Tyreek Hill.
Battled last night against OKC. Be tough, tough sledding for them.
Yeah.
Tyreek Hill was great.
Was he?
I need to go watch that entire. What was it called? Fins something?
Fins Up?
Fins Up, whatever that thing was. I need to watch that whole video podcast of him on a concrete slab.
Are you going to be in here more than one day with me this week, or what are you
doing?
I'll
do what you need me to do.
All of them.
Really?
Well, maybe not tomorrow.
You don't have, Thursday.
No.
Thursday is the dynamic duo. So
Dieter and Sherm.
For 4 hours. Oh, Jake, you haven't been exposed to that. Good luck. They're going to run you ragged.
Oh, I doubt that.
Well,
I
they think guaranteed they might. Guests, right?
Oh, sure.
Sure. Sure.
And I've got, I've got everything built in. Stan Weber's basically my co-host for 2 hours. So
yeah.
And you don't want to do it tomorrow. So about whatever
you need. I talk
witness,
to Jake.
What about Wednesday?
I'll be around.
Matt Derrick coming in for an hour on Wednesday. Come hang out with Matt Derrick.
You know, tomorrow. Matt Derrick doesn't like me.
Who's in tomorrow?
Blumo will be in. We'll have Andy Rogers, and I'm working on a few other things.
Why don't you work on some football?
I have those things in
football
in the can.
It is the Sparta Kings.
Tonight
Better
is the Boddicker Foundation bourbon raffle
That's
draw.
That's right.
And you guarantee me, you pull my name, you're not throwing
sure
me around.
Sure I will. And listen to the comments tonight. Playoff action, Ticketmaster, tickets for less. If you don't go, listen to it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.